Blog Talk Radio.
Going red, the bed of coals, the poet is born. Our story is riddled with challenges and changes, like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled into shape. If only forging a poet were that easy. Emotional development, relationship, experiences, environment, genetics, all take hand in molding the immature adult we are today. That was a joke. Come on, we're on the air.
So welcome to the Double Helix, where we examine the X's and Y's on a show celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what ties the room together. So get comfortable, because what you're about to hear is poetry that we are made of.
I'm the Duke of St. Paul, Dexter Bailey.
And I'm Aphasiana. We will be featuring poems from our contest on the website allpoetry.com. We are part of a group on the website called Late Night Poets. If you are in the group, you can follow along the chat to read the poems as we do for the full experience. However, you do not need to be in the group to contribute poems, call in, or listen.
Thank you, Fill My Eyes from Late Night Poets, and thank you, Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, Dexter, for hosting with me, and to everyone who contributed poems or called in. Your writing is what we are here for.
There we are, there we are. Hope everybody is well out there. I'm the Duke of St. Paul, Dexter Bailey, a.k.a. Duke Skywalker, a.k.a. Dex Arcana. We are back in the place to be, the Double Helix, with my co-host, Aphasiana. How are you, Aphasiana?
I'm all right. Seems like it's been a crazy week, but it's okay. I got my phone stolen today. I don't know at what point, but I just did the little find my phone, and it's out in the field, like outside of the city, according to the satellite. And I'm like, how did you get there?
Well, how do you know you got it stolen, or you didn't just leave it?
Because I wasn't in a field on the other side of the highway.
Well, what if somebody just picked it up and they're trying to give it back to you? See, I did this whole thing, Faziana. I showed up like, oh, my God, this SOB stole my phone. And I showed up and knocked at the person's door, and turns out they never even had it. The GPS was just wrong. I almost ended up on the news. So don't trust it. It's probably not even in a field. But anyway, it might be. I don't know where you live. It might be. Or what you were doing. So, but anyway.
We have two callers.
Well, okay. Oh, do we? Perfect.
Now, because I don't have my usual call display, I'm not totally sure who it is, but I think one of them is Laurent. Am I right?
I hope you didn't lose an iPhone. Those are not cheap.
Yeah.
Oh, they are.
If that's what it is.
Laurent knows.
It's an old one, but yes.
Well,
even the old
one.
Those things hold bad. Sorry, go ahead, Laurent.
Hi. Good evening, everyone. And
hello.
Very pleased to be on this show.
There we go.
We're very pleased to have you here. And then we have a mystery person. Who else is on the phone?
I am not mystery now. I am like, I feel like I'm here. I've made it. No, I'm kidding. This is Confess.
Confess.
Hey,
welcome.
Imagine if it was the person that had your phone. That would be the weird part.
Look, the phone line yesterday was really, like, weird. It would not let me call. Yeah, I called six times. I guess it was so mad at me for being on hold so long. I don't know.
Well, we've got you now.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
All right. Well, where do we want to go to a page now?
I'm going to put Laurent up first.
I'm not sure I'm ready to read that yet. Can I read somebody else's list?
Nope. Oh, yeah, sure. That's fine. Okay, so our prompts today were quotes from John Green, and he's an author of mostly young adult literature, but the quotes are not from his books. They're just things he said. And the first one is, "My thoughts are stars I cannot fathom into constellations." So Stephen T. Wellman wrote to that. And why don't I get you to read that one, Laurent, to get us started?
By all means. Stephen T. Wellman, Fallen Stars. It begins when our optics open, the defining dawn of a new day. We may not see it. We may not agree with it. Yet, it is the unthinkable. It is the wrinkle in time. The sublime sunrise on the distant horizon. It's in the simple smile, the extra mile others go to encourage. It's in the discipline and determination. Yes, you are a marvelous creation. The combination of you and what you do has the power to sunshower those you love. Don't ever let anyone tell you you're not enough. Don't ever let anyone tell you you don't measure up. It is in the tickling twilight, the sinking sunset. Hope is like a star, and it is reachable in the galaxy of humanity. We are all stars. We are fallen stars. Let's reach out to one another. We are broken celestial bodies. We don't shine bright in prosperity. We shine bright in adversity. The darker the night, the brighter we shine. End poem.
Awesome read, Laurent.
Thank you very much for that. And why don't we just start with you, Confess, on comments.
Yes, I thought that Stephen did it again, where he is describing this picture of us as humans and how we all kind of are connected in a way, you know, whether we want to admit it to ourselves or not. We are creation and connectivity through atoms and energy, and he's, I feel, describing that, and then also describing in this imagery way to where we can see it. We can see the stars. We can see the universe in a way that we probably haven't seen it before, or even wanted to stop to think about it and just take a breath and say, you know what? I know I had a bad day, but maybe someone had a worse day than I did. Worse is not a word, but, you know, even worse of a day than I did. So let me appreciate where I am right now. And, yes, I may have had that bad day, but let me just be grateful for the good moments I did have. So that's what it took me to, like, okay, I see you, Stephen. That was great. It's a great poem.
Thank you, Confess. That's a great comment. Laurent, if I could go to you for a second comment on this one.
Yeah, the beginning, it begins when our optics open, the defining day, dawn of a new day. We may not see it. Sometimes in life, we begin to see things from a different perspective, not the one that is usual for us. So many of us dwell in self-misery, I'm not enough, I'm not good enough, or another person is not what I want them to be, et cetera, et cetera. And yet we find that things like the simple smile from one person to another, that extra bit we give any particular thing to help somebody else, to encourage them, it's in the discipline and determination that we manage to muster. And the combination of all of those things, including and not the least of which is love. And all those things Stephen brings up in the early part of the poem, and begins to talk about hope being like a star, something that's reachable. And I guess his point, we are all stars. We are fallen stars. Let's reach out to one another. Kind of says none of us is perfect, yet in the things that we can do for each other in bad times, not just great times, we can really shine brightly. And I appreciate that that point of view, and I appreciate the poem. Nice job.
Great comment, Laurent. I agree, and I'm glad that you I right away went to the bottom, and I'm glad that you pointed out the top. Defining dawn of a new day, we may not see it. You know, I think that too, that's a great metaphor, and it's the double entendre, because stars obviously don't see the new day, do they? Right? I think that was where he was going. I think stars are in the night sky, and it's not that they don't see the night day, it's that we don't see them, I guess, in the new day, in the next day. But I think that the way that he ended this is so profound, and fallen stars. I just think the title and everything is so profound, because it's kind of different than what you would expect. It's just that I think that in our fallen moments are we the most important, and we shine the most bright. Rather than that, I wasn't quite sure if this was going to go towards the negative side just because of fallen stars. But I thought that he crafted this masterfully. So very well done, Stephen. And Faziana, what do you think?
I really enjoyed it, and I like all the comments that you've made so far. I think that there's a lot of wisdom in this. I think he gives good advice, which don't let anyone tell you that you're not enough. Don't let them make you feel that you don't measure up. I thought the way that he described things was really nice. And the idea of us being fallen stars, and that it's like the sunset. But the thing is about stars is we see their light after the fact. We see them as bright once they've faded. Sometimes after they're actually gone, we see their light. And I feel like his poem makes it seem like your light, we shine bright in adversity. Even when we're going through a rough time, like a star at the end of its life, we are actually sometimes shining our brightest, and other people can get the most out of it. So to have power in that adversity and still know that you're affecting other people and that you can experience something from their light as well, and it just creates a sense of community. I think it was beautiful.
Good comment, Ephesiana. I don't know if there's ever been a more used, but it's always good and it's almost always applicable. And I don't know if it's because of what he talked about is that we're from stars, but I don't know if there's anything more used in art and just in life and in general than the star. I mean, all of a sudden it's just not all of a sudden, but it's always been such an applicable thing to write about. And it's just such a beautiful metaphor when it's used right. So very well done, Stephen. So where are we heading to next, Ephesiana?
For that same quote, we have one by Spotty Stripes. Confess, would you read the one I just put on the board by Spotty?
I sure have.
Thank you.
My thoughts are stars. A quote by John Green, my thoughts are stars I cannot fathom into constellations. They all glow with dairy furry, with raging heat emitting light, each a small piece of a story or a character in the night. Some will capture brief attention as they strike against the sky, drifting in, dipping in and out of focus, fleeing past my mind, soul, eye. A few twinkle of in sheer beauty, in buoyant reds and whites and blues. Others wander out of vision in dim, undiscerning hues. Some explode before they vanish and get lost to time and space, but spread their magic far and wide to make my mind a better place. Oh, these specks of light might guide me as one by one I see and grind. I see and grin, but to view as constellations, no, I really can't begin. End poem.
Awesome, you confess. And fantastic write, Spotty Stripes. Laurent, if I could get you to comment first, that would be great.
Certainly. I was kind of fascinated by the quote, my thoughts of stars I cannot fathom into constellations. And I was eager to see how the poet would handle the quote. And he begins by describing thoughts as glowing with varied fury, with raging heat, emitting light, each a small piece of a story or a character in the night. And that is kind of what thoughts are. Now, some do rage with heat. Others are muted. Some thoughts are never voiced. They're just there for a very brief moment. As the poet says, some will capture my attention as they streak across my sky. And, you know, some thoughts will take your breath away, and others are magnificent. They're like fireworks. They explode, and then, of course, they vanish, lost to time and space. So all these disparate thoughts are in everyone's head, really. And usually they do make a mind a better place. But to view as constellations, no, I really can't begin. The ending is perfect because I kind of see that in my own mind. The thoughts are disparate. They're wide-ranging. They're about almost anything. But I can't really form them, most of the time at least, into a cohesive whole. I don't see them as a constellation, just as the individual points of light. So from that point of view, very perceptive piece.
Great comment, Laurent. Yeah, I thought that this was a fantastic piece, and I kind of almost got the feeling of you know, the thought or the idea of what America could be, the land of the free, you know. A few twinkle in the sheer beauty and buoyant reds and whites and blues. You know, he adds that, and others flounder out of vision in dim, undiscerning hues. He ties this whole thing in very well, but to tie in the red, white, and blue, and then the stars like the flag. This poem could be used in a multitude of ways, but it could be also used as the soul and the possibilities and the American kind of thought, I guess, in a lot of ways. I just thought that this was a very striking rite, and I thought that it can be taken as literal or as metaphorical or abstract as needed. So I thought that this was very well done. Confess, what did you think about this rite?
Yes, I also found the ending to kind of have the same understanding I did. Was I still can't fathom that my thoughts are like stars, because I don't know what really a star is. Like, I can't touch them, I can't feel them, I can't hold them. They're too hot, you know, and they combust. So where do they go when they combust, you know? So my thoughts are always here. So I don't feel like my thoughts go anywhere. I mean, they can combust, but do they really combust? I don't know. But yeah, I love the thought of, it's like a question here at the end, and kind of answering yourself too, because, you know, it's like, no, my thoughts aren't really constellations. But I like the ending, and I love that first stanza. It really catches you. They all glow very fiery with raging heat. At first you think he's describing the star, right? And he may be describing the star, but now he takes us into this, like, conflicting thought process now. So, and but the words he chose to use were beautiful, and the format he used is beautiful, and it all just kind of wraps you whole. It's like a hug you get from a thought or a conversation to just talk about stars. It's very fascinating here. This is a really great rite.
Great comment, Confess. And Faziana, why don't you take us to the last place? Or actually, we might have Miss Pam Ray on.
I believe we do.
The shooting star, Pam,
yes,
might be actually on.
Hiya, Faziana.
Welcome,
hi,
Pam.
Good to be here.
Pam. Well, we'll go to you first. We'll go to Faziana. I'll give you a moment to read and double check to make sure that you got a chance to read it. But we'll go to Faziana first for a comment.
Sure. I really enjoyed the second stanza, especially. I mean, I liked it all, but the second stanza spoke to me the most. Dipping in and out of focus, fleeting past my mind's dull eye. I feel like especially the last couple of years for me, that's how my thoughts are. It's like I can almost grasp them, and then they're gone. So that's not a good thing, but I think he describes it really well. It was a really enjoyable piece. I think that it captured the quote well.
Great comment, Faziana. Yeah, I'm fresh off of COVID for me, and I have brain fog, so I can identify with that. It's all over the place. Pam, what do you think about that rite?
Oh, I enjoyed this one. I've always enjoyed Spotty Stripes poetry, wonderful rhyming poetry. I really do like it all the way through, but that first one captured my attention with the opening line, "They all glow with varied fury, with raging heat emitting light." The whole idea that every single kind of thought we have, whether it's brief or it lingers on, has its own place, its own importance in our life. You know, and this is really a great rite to describe the beauty and the variations of thoughts and the process of it. So just a wonderful rite and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And Faziana, I think we have Frank on, correct?
No, I don't see him on the phone. He's on the top the chat board, but I don't have any callers in.
Awesome. Well, Frank, good to see you on the chat board. And Faziana, why don't you bring us to the next comment or next poem?
All right. So here we have one called My Thoughts Are Stars, to the same prompt, of course. And Dexter, would you read that one?
Of course. This is by W.P. McLeod, one. My Thoughts Are Stars. My thoughts are stars on a black velvet cape, waving red lining to a cross-armed audience. The dark theater, seeking skeptics tapping, spoilers and complaints on shiny cell phones. As the plush curtain opened to a woman in a cage, my hand raised, a wooden rod and pulled silken scarves from her bodice that flew without wings, wrapping rainbows in her ashen hair. When I spun on my heels and she rose in the air, my eyes blazed like comets, streaking the night with crepe ribbons like an ancient astrologer, casting horoscope charts on sketched parchment frames. All my thoughts pierced with vellum paper, burning holes like black stars. The crowd gasped, amazed, when she appeared at my side, sequined and sparkling, blinding their gaze beneath constellations, painting dark ceiling skies. They found fault in the stars, not in the pupils of their eyes. End poem. Great, great right, W.P. McLeod, or McLeod, I think is what it is. McLeod, one. Faziano, why don't you start comments on this one?
Sorry, I have a lot of background noise right now. Can you skip me for a second?
Absolutely. Why don't we go to Laurent?
Yes. This particular piece has some phrasing which is very, very interesting to me. My thoughts are stars on a black velvet cape, waving red lining to a cross-armed audience, and then begins to talk about a theater and a curtain opening to a woman in a cage, and I immediately had in my head the image of a magician on stage performing wonders of wonder, which are laid out very nicely, like an ancient astrologer casting horoscope charts on stretched parchment frames, and his thoughts piercing the vellum paper, burning holes like black stars. Now, the next last stanza talks about an amazed audience gasping. And then the ending puzzles me a little bit, because the last two lines talk about finding fault in the stars, not in the pupils of their eyes, which means they're not placing any blame at all on what is in their eyes, but rather in what the eyes are seeing, which are the stars. It seems to contradict the point of the poem a wee bit. Now, it's probably because I'm misreading it, but I'll let somebody else speak to that point if they want. Otherwise than that, very well written and enjoyable piece.
Awesome comment, Laurent, and I agree. I think a little bit, and you could comment on maybe if this is a little bit along the lines of what you see here. I wonder if it has something to do with, because he talks here too, a woman in a cage, opened a woman in a cage, silken scarves. And so I wonder if it's a little bit along the lines of maybe a dancer, and maybe people's thoughts of towards her being a little bit more skewed rather than her thoughts of what herself is. And she's actually the star, you know. I mean, I don't know if that's along the lines of what it was, but I think that nowadays, I think that this whole sex worker kind of, that might even be a bad phrase, that these dancers and exotic dancers and these things have become so much more open now that the points of view towards them are beginning to change, you know? I don't know. I thought that this was you're right. It is a very interesting write, and it is a little bit almost contradictory in the way that it says, because my thoughts, it almost says from the title that it's my thoughts, it's from my eyes, but then it kind of removes themselves from being the audience. So it is. You're right. Like I said, I agree, and I don't know. I could be wrong about this also. But confess, what do you think about this poem?
I thought this was a very descriptive poem, very abstract here. Also, maybe he watched the movie A Fault in Our Stars and was trying to kind of emulate what he felt they were, you know, feeling or doing or in the movie, or the relationship between the two in the movie, and kind of maybe the towards the end was something he felt like a conclusion was like, well, there isn't thoughts in the stars, or they didn't find actual fault in their stars, and it was just because they, like, even in the Fault in Our Stars, like, cover, you see them looking at each other in the space. So maybe he's trying to kind of channel all of that in this right is what I'm thinking. That's what I think. But I could be wrong, but it was great imagery here.
Great comment. And, you know, and also, too, when you're saying that the he part, if this is put to a male, then it definitely is something that was previously taboo that might be opening up. Pam, what did you think about this right?
I thought it just had really wonderful imagery and metaphors. And, you know, I honestly figured that the last two lines were a nod towards that John Green did write The Fault in Our Stars. Now, what the poet meant by those, them, I can only guess. But I'm guessing since they referenced, gave a nod to the book, that perhaps they are going along the whole storyline of love amongst tragedy. You know, I really liked this all the way through. It's always interesting to me when you have people write to the same quote and you in different styles. You know, like this one is very deep in metaphors. I particularly like the dark theater seating skeptics tapping spoilers and complaints on shiny cell phones. You know, that makes me think of people who can't wait to pass along the next gossip, but it makes you also think how people are always constantly focused on their cell phones. They're really not focused necessarily on taking time to think. I also thought the whole idea that the thoughts is a magic show being performed for somebody else was a wonderful extended metaphor and spoke really well on being a poet, on being an artist, or even a performer of any kind, because too often your thoughts are not your own to be kept safely, but rather to be put out there for other people's amusement. So really just an excellent write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And you're talking about it being a magic show. Man, I must have a perverted mind. I was thinking a moment picturing this as being a different kind of show.
Oh,
but
my
anyway,
God. Well, you're probably right.
No, you're probably at home. Somebody wrote about a magic show. I'm glad that you had the sense to comment on that. Anyway, Faziana, bring us to what you think, or comment, and then bring us to the next write.
while you probably do have a dirty mind, she is pulling scarves from her bodice, so I don't think you're totally wrong. And even those old school magic shows kind of had the female assistant that, you know, bordered on a dancer, kind of.
Yeah, you're right.
They were definitely emphasized as eye candy back in the day. God, I sound old. the part that I really liked was all my thoughts pierce the vellum paper, burning holes like black stars. So it's the negative space kind of stars, where rather than, you know, paint on bright stars, you're piercing the holes, and it, that becomes where the light comes through. Or it looks dark on the paper as you do it. It's just a different perspective. It's like the opposite than I might expect, and I like that about it. At the beginning, when it's talking about the people in the movie theater, I'm like naturally angry because I hate when people have their cell phones in the theater and you can like see that glow instead of the movie that you're trying to watch. But something about the way it's described is the seating skeptics tapping spoilers and complaints, because you know that it's like there's this like negative air about that. I thought that this created a really interesting mood, and I like where they took this prompt. Now I wrote to the same prompt, so I'm gonna throw mine in earlier than I usually do, just because I'm going in order of prompts. This is called Connect the Dots by Faziana. My words scatter around me. On optimistic days, they resemble confetti. Every burst of ideas is a glitter bomb. Those thoughts cling to unlikely places, sparkling for you days after you think you're rid of me. But you only capture the odd spot, so it's up to you to connect the dots. Turn my stars into constellations. On rough days, they are grenades. Ideas are ricocheting bullets. But I only provide the ammunition. It is your interpretation that will turn explosions into art, a firework display with my fire. I will share the landmarks that define me, but you will sketch the map and draw your own conclusions. End poem.
Great read of Faziana, and great writing. Pam, can we start with you on comments?
Yeah, absolutely. I really like this, and oh my goodness, the glitter bomb reference. I think anybody who's ever been around kids doing art crafts with glitter can totally relate to that. You know, it gets all over the place, and the moment you think you have it cleaned up, it's not. But what I like is the overall feel of this. the overall message of, you know, I will, within my poetry, within the words I speak, within my actions, show you how I define myself. But with this acceptance and realization that the reader, the observer, will oftentimes interpret things based on how, you know, their life, their experiences, you know, how they view the words and the metaphors and the imagery. I really did like, besides the sparkling for days, that part made me laugh, the sparkling for days and unlikely places. But the whole thing was great, but another great part was on rough days, they are grenades. Ideas are ricocheting bullets, and those are often the toughest days. But just a strong write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And Laurent, maybe we'll go to you for a comment.
All right. First of all, Faziana, this is a very tight little poem. I don't think it's a misplaced word. I too appreciated, like Pam, the image of a burst of ideas being like a glitter bomb, but especially because the ideas like bits of glitter cling to unlikely places. sparkling for you days after you think you got rid of me. We can think about something, and it can go away, but then comes back, and may come back again and again. And at that point, I think it's worth exploiting whatever little bit of glitter is there that does not want to die. But I most appreciate the lines that is your interpretations that will turn explosions into art, a fireworks display with my fire. I will share the landmarks that define me, but you will sketch the map to draw your conclusions. And to me, these are wise words, because, you know, your thoughts open to interpretation by others are like poems, open to interpretations by others. And sometimes someone will find something in a poem we write that you never thought of, but it's accurate, it's a good observation, and then now you've gained another insight into what you may have meant. And that was kind of clumsily said, but I think you see what I mean. A great piece.
Thank you very much, Laurent. Great comment. And confess, what did you think about this write?
What it took me to with Afasiana is that I remember our conversation a couple of weeks ago when you were saying how you kind of have kind of two different personalities or a few personalities. And it took me there to that conversation when in the first stanza where you're talking about, I guess, when you're bubbly and cool and, you know, that fun to be around spirit. And then in the second stanza to the last, you're talking about when you can explode or when you're not in a good mood or, you know, people probably don't want to be around you or, you know, you stay to yourself and or your thoughts in that made you stay to yourself. So I don't know. It took me there to that conversation we had, me, you, and Pam a few weeks ago. And what else I said was that, you know, great imagery here, very descriptive. I completely agree with Laurent on how tight this poem is. It's like every word was chosen for a reason, and it was thought out, and I just thought it was wonderful. Oh, yeah, and I did the finger motion to the sky, like that, mwah, you know, perfect.
Great comment, confess. Yeah, I thought that this was a fantastic piece, and she's exactly right. Faziana can swing a sword, is right. She will burn. No, I'm just kidding. No, she's never been nothing. But very nice to me, but that doesn't mean that I don't believe that she can be in person. Or, you know, anybody that's kind of, I think, that can reveal this much emotion, you know, the show is about personal rights. If you can reveal one emotion, you can easily reveal another, and I think that Faziana does a great job at being so positive. But that doesn't mean that she can't really spin out of place and drop a little bit of a firework display the other way. I will share the landmarks that define me, but you will sketch the map to draw the conclusion. You know, and how we are remembered. We'll be made up by other people. You know, that's the end of it, you know, much like almost, this is maybe a weird way to view it, but the way that abuse or anything is viewed, right, is viewed by everybody else, right? As they connect the dots, they're the one that makes it on how it feels. And so a person's constellation is drawn out, not by the way that they describe themselves, but by the way everybody else describes them. So great write, Afasiana. I thought that this was fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Okay. Our next few poems are to a new quote. It's, I am not in the business of denying myself the simple pleasures of saying true things. So this is, again, by John Green. And confess, why don't we start with yours?
Ooh, okay. This one's called The Truest Convictions. The identity of who I can be has rest inside of race, class, and opportunity. I am black, box checked, mixed with a little bit of this and a little bit of that. My tongue's fierce, but I don't mean what I say. I do, and yet apologize anyway. I'm tired of apologizing for your confusions, or rather, your delusions. First, let's start by making peace. plugging in and out of this TV. The fight of us versus them no longer rests about, no longer about shade, but the highest gem. This curse dispersed, a fairy tale. You work hard, get far, then all is well. The lies, I can testify. Graduated, got a job, but still no house left to stay mine. Or the glee of mentioning the rules to this game. A shame we try to maintain, and yes, there is someone to blame. They try to say we are our own worst enemies. Wrong, carry on your wide world, your worldwide mysteries. I forget to mention, secondly, the impediment of my own history. The wearily observed past of a few with darker shades all can't remember. Or thirdly, the lies over Thanksgiving dinner. I take pleasure not celebrating your holidays about massacres of hardship slaves. Many would hate to read these lines, all build up on American timelines. We chased, we settled, we killed. My truest convictions turn so dim. End poem.
Awesome, right? Confess. Thank you. And that was a fantastic read. You wrote it with such, or you read it with such conviction. Faziano, why don't we start with you on comment?
I feel your conviction in this. I like the strength that you write with, and you have such a good reading voice for throwing your enthusiasm in there. I love that. So I like that you say my tongue fierce. And it sounds like you do. And then there is that sense of, you know, sometimes we apologize for things because we feel too, we came on too strong. But yet, even when you mean it, you say, I do, and yet apologize anyway. And I think that's something that especially women tend to do. It's like, I'm sorry for having this opinion, but I'm sorry. I don't know. People joke mm-hmm. that I'm too Canadian, so I apologize for absolutely everything. Someone will crash into me, and I'll be like, sorry. it's that that instinct that kind of gets drilled into us. And I think that you do a beautiful job here of expressing yourself. And I like that you did it in just short little couplets or lines by themselves rather than a big stanza, because I think it breaks it down. So it's very nice to read, and your eye just jumps from couplet to couplet. Very nicely done.
Thank you.
Great comment, Faziana. Let's go with Pam. What did you think about this write?
Yeah, I really liked this. I thought it was strong. It was emotive. I liked, too, that it was written in these couplets and it bounced from thought to thought. I thought there was this kind of raw honesty about it that, you know, just said, here I am. This is the core of me. This is, you know, who I am. Or the glee of mentioning the rules, the game, a shame we try to maintain. Yes, there is someone to blame. They try to say we are our own worst enemies. Wrong, carry on your worldwide mysteries. You know, there's such a sense of the empowerment in those lines, of not being willing to play the game, but rather following your own path. I also really like... or thirdly, the lies over Thanksgiving dinner. Sometimes family get-togethers can be some of the most trying, you know, especially when there's skeletons in the closet. You know, just a really great write all the way through, Confess, and very well done.
Thanks, Pam.
Great comment, Pam. Laurent, what did you think about this write?
I was much taken by the first two lines. The identity of who I can be has rested inside of race, class, and opportunity. And then the next stanza, I am black, box checked, mixed with a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Now, an African American has a history in this country, mixed with success, but an enormous amount of tragedy in the way they were treated, in the way they came to this country. So you're dealing with a different worldview, really, from that of a Caucasian person, perhaps. And so you say things that you really mean, but because you don't want to be acerbic or rattle the cage, et cetera, you end up apologizing for your thoughts, which is completely natural, to me at least. Where is it? Oh, yeah, or the glee of mentioning the rules to this game, a shame we try to maintain, and yes, there is someone to blame. They try to say we are our own worst enemies. Well, they are not their own worst enemies. In many ways, we were their own worst enemies. So many things that we view as, as the game. You're not playing by the same rules we are. No, it's a different game, I think, entirely. I've got to mention, secondly, the impediment of my own history. And it is kind of an anchor, because it's going to be there regardless of what you say or don't say. It's like the elephant in the room. So for that point of view, I really like we chase, we settled, we killed. My truest convictions turn so dimmed we can be influenced by the circumstances around us always. And so I think that point of view in this particular poem is very strong, and I appreciate it. Very well done.
Awesome comment, Ron. Yeah, I have to agree 100%, you know, and you know, I, from what I've heard as the term used as being an ally, you know, as far as people from minorities and people of color and black people and stuff, you know, it's about being an ally, you know, and be willing to step out into that range where, you know, people were all blown away by Christopher Columbus's statue coming down, but that guy was a murdering racist bastard, you know? So, you know, it's being an ally and recognizing that guy's head needed to come off the statue and he needed to come down, you know? And like what he put on here, things, you know, lies over Thanksgiving, get dinner and things like that. You know, I thought that this poem was very profound, and I thought it was very well done. So great job, Confess.
Thank you. I just want to say one thing about the poem really quickly.
Yeah,
so
go
towards the end, when I was talking about the impediment of my own history, I was talking about how mostly people of color and mostly like African American people, they don't have like you know how you go to school and they ask you to do like a family tree. I feel like I speak for most African American people when that's probably the most awkward thing you could ask a black person to do, because we don't know. Like, we don't even know. Like, some people can say, I'm Scottish American, and I'm like, yeah. I just know I'm from somewhere in some country in Africa. We don't even know like where we are or where we're from, you know, and that could like taunt you the more you get older and the more like you read and you're educated, especially on other people's cultures and other people know like where they're from. It could be the most daunting thing. That's why I made that mention. And then at the Thanksgiving dinner, I was kind of trying to make mention of like how the Native Americans was here in America, and yet we sit here and lie like, oh, they got along and then they chose them. First they try to make it seem like Americans and the Pilgrims were like friends and they had dinner together, and I'm like, that is such a lie. We know what happened. You know, so that's why I said that towards the end. But you are right. There is lies that happen between family, too, at Thanksgiving dinner. But, yeah, I wanted to kind of speak for all people of color in this right about, you know, how you kind of got to play the game to get ahead.
Yep.
You can't really speak your mind. It, like if someone asked me if I liked that cake and it was dry, you know, to go to a friend's house, it's like, yeah,
absolutely.
It feels so good.
Absolutely. Well, I thought it was a great write overall, and thank you for submitting it. I thought that this was a very important piece. And also, too, C.L. Howard, if you are listening out there, and I hope that you're not going through or I know that, you know, these are tough times for everybody. I if you are listening and you'd like to get involved, make sure and just submit a piece that you can submit any piece, any personal piece, maybe a past piece, but I don't want to discount or I've seen you around on here and I might not know you, but I don't want to count out anybody that's out there listening right now that wouldn't enjoy just getting involved. So if you are out there and you are listening, I would just love it if you felt like you wanted to submit a piece, put it on the thread, and we'll get you read. So anyway, I know that these are tough times, but Faziana, why don't you bring us to the next person?
Okay, so I have one on the board by Daniel Deschino, if you'll read that, Dexter.
Absolutely. This is Ancient Wisdom by Daniel Deschino. Blistering, scorching desert sun, black hole of water, tormentor of living. Yet I dig and I dig, hope of lost treasures, dying with each passing lost year. I have allowed myself the pleasure of failure, acceptance. Like a lone star in the night desert sky, I've given myself the gift of simple existence and not tried to make the connections, constellations, imagery to complicate what I know to be. How long can I pretend I search and nothing? Those stars that I watch, well, they must have seen me at least once. For one small container, 1,000 years void of starlight, caress my hand, my hands on this day. And from the scroll within, I've become power and wisdom shared. Use wisely those who read. The universe abhors absolutes. Nature attracts, bonds, connects. It always has, since before the second hand. Or before the first second. But there is truth, and then there is not. The false prophet is like poison from a trusted friend. Their words attack and destroy from the inside. And that loved one that comes to you with a look of frightened shame, petrified of words of trauma they will release, the hidden letter deep within the attic catacombs to break the levee to a lake of hidden tears. Beware the piercing breath from the voice of fate, speak loudest to the naked mind. But who can I trust more than me? And what more can I ask for than trust? The world may wear me down, may judge with instant eyes, alone and unable to explain, might read an epitaph. With truth in mind, I find a noble road, and righteous I walk, the honest man, dignity of self, ancient wisdom with truth of mind. End poem. Great write, Daniel. And Laurent, could we start with you on comments?
Yeah, this is a pretty deep poem. I wish I'd read it before the show. The idea that we dig and dig within ourselves, looking for the hope of lost treasures, which dies with each passing lost year, but allowing yourself or himself to the pleasure of failure acceptance. I've accepted the fact that I've failed at what I want. And that in itself can be a very, very liberating. I've given myself the gift of simple existence and not tried to make the connections, constellation, imagery to complicate what I know to be. We're satisfied, in other words, with what we have come to accept. But, you know, there are other points of view, and we can't be completely certain of it because it says that the universe abhors absolutes, and nature attracts bonds, connects, it always has, and talks about truth. There is truth, and then there is not. And sometimes the truth is hidden, hidden, as he says, lettered deep within the attic catacombs to break the levee to a lake of hidden tears. Some truths are very, very painful and are best left in secret where they lie, perhaps. And you've got to be able to trust yourself from that point of view and do the best you can. You know, with truth in mind, I find a noble road. And righteous, I walk the honest man dignity of self, which, as far as I'm concerned, is ancient wisdom. As long as you have your own dignity, as long as you know who you are, regardless of what all the other things that life puts in front of you or tempts you or how other people think of you, dignity of self is very, very important. Daniel has done a fine job with this piece. I really like it.
Great comment, Laurent. And Pam, can we go to you for a comment?
Yeah, absolutely. I always really appreciate Daniel's writing. It's very thoughtful, very philosophical. You know, I like how this is about facing our own ability to love to the deepest and fullest. I like how there's this kind of, in the sense, in the middle about the connection and the balance that's created within nature and between people and how oftentimes that balance is thrown off. I think what really hits hard, though, is that ending where, you know, if somebody comes to you and they have something to share and they're afraid of being rejected, you know, find the ability to love, you know, not to have the time to judge, but rather to embrace. And within that embracing, there's that wisdom, that truth of mind, and that ability for humanity to connect. And really just a powerful rite all the way through, and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And confess, what do you think about this rite?
Yeah, I thought it was beautiful. Daniel never disappoints us, ever. And he always has you thinking very deeply about what he writes. And I love that about his writing, that you have to kind of dig deep in yourself to understand some of the things he's coming from. And I feel like he's one of those writers, too, that gets you to learn as well. And his format here is beautiful as well. It's something different that I haven't seen before in poetry, how he has that line a little longer in the middle of the poem, like right in the middle of the page towards the end. And just very descriptive, very the imagery here, the personification here, just the spacing even is, like you guys said about the last poem, was, you know, I feel like it was intentional, so you can see exactly the thoughts that he's saying. I thought it had some emotion in it as well, and it was just very, very, very good.
Great comment, confess. And Faziana, why don't you bring us for the last comment and take us to the next one?
I think this is amazing. I always enjoy Daniel's work, so I'm excited when he enters the contest. I really like the part that Laurent pointed out. I've given myself the gift of simple existence and not tried to make the connection, constellation, imagery to complicate what I know to be. There's that idea of not overthinking everything, which, you know, I overthink everything, so I envy those who are capable of such a thing. But I like what he says there. And then the part that really broke my heart was the hidden letter deep within the attic catacombs to break the levee to a lake of hidden tears. That is such an amazing metaphor there, coming right after the line that saying that a loved one's coming to you with a look of fright and shame and they're afraid to share something. And then it's just that releasing of the levee. it's such a powerful piece all throughout. I liked the piercing breath from the voice of fate speaks loudest to the naked mind. Just incredible writing as always, Daniel. And Pam, would you read your poem? Thanks, Dex.
Go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to ask Pam to read her poem.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I wrote this one to the third quote. And this is "The Way Dreams Suck." And it goes like this. The forewarning. This poem will suck. It will suck like an orgasmic lamprey writhing about, flinging sediments in no foreseeable direction. At least I hope it does, because I've given myself permission to suck. Oh, sweet Nervosa, what if I suck at sucking? Insert "Sweet Caroline" by Neil Young. The random thought. An ode to peanut brittle and the way it sticks to my molars. I want to write poetry that clings to enamel, that has a taste people are forced to remember long after they've become sick of it. The cliche, "I love you, my knight in shining armor, my soul loves your soul," my overused phrases, loves your overused phrases. "I love you as the rose loves the rain and opens her petals to accept the sacred dew. Rest in peace, Otto Rank. We both know you never had a damn chance. Killed in an avalanche of corn and cheese, death by emotions. Sweet Dreams by Marilyn Manson. Sorry, Annie. Today, you're not my cup of tea." Another random thought. There's a giant empty bottle of Merlot standing on my bedroom floor, erect as a morning glory. It took me 2 months to finish it, so I guess I won't be joining the ranks of poetic alcoholics anytime soon. Now, let's return to that lamprey. Or maybe not. The rant. Free yourselves, ye scurvy sea dogs, ye lily-livered mongrels. Insert Roxanne by The Police. We are all whores offering ourselves to the lashing post of helpful suggestions. Free yourself. Be yourself. Need yourself. Give yourself permission to suck. Break the tyrannic chains of your mind. Ponders the thought of how many times the word suck can be used in one poem. The answer is 6. The word suck can be used 6 times in one poem. Never mind. Make that 7. The heart-shaped box revealed. With the lights out, it's less dangerous. Here we are now. Entertain us. I feel stupid and contagious. Here we are now. Entertain us. Oh, Kurt, I always dreamed I'd entertain you after I dug my way out of my awkward stage. But I understand. Life is a pile of razor blade manure stinking the place up. And honestly, you, I, and Jim Morrison, we all know some awkwardness isn't just a stage. It's a blessing. It's a curse. It's a way of life that sees you to the vomit of dreams. I hope someday to sing with you both. The end, finally. I'm hungry for potato sausage dipped in spicy brown mustard. Oh, my beautiful and patient reader, so filled with hope. Were you expecting a profound ending? If it makes you feel better, you can imagine the sausage and mustard as a deep, succulent metaphor. Or if you prefer to be turned on, feel free to take it in as the glorious awakening of an innuendo. Insert the end by The Doors. End poem.
Awesome read, Pam. And awesome write overall here. Maybe if we could get Afasiana to start with this one. Or maybe not. Maybe she might be busy at the moment. Maybe we go with Confess to start.
Okay. I thought this was a very eye-catching poem. The way Pam wrote it or was reciting it made it feel like it was like some kind of satire-y kind of feel in it. And I love that. I love the imagery here. I love the insert here parts. I thought that was really quirky and clever. I love how she has an ode to the peanut brittle, and then she talks about, she's actually, like, talking to us, the reader. I love how she has, like, mentions people's names, like Marilyn Manson and things you can relate to in this poem. I love that she has, like, musical indications here of people. Like, I just thought it was really very quirky, and I love the format. Again, you know, I can't write in this format at all, Pam, but I think you do such a great job getting your reader's attention, and that's I think, important when you, you know, someone who writes poetry and you want to share it. It's like, I want you to see. I want to share my thoughts with you, and I think this is a really cool way of doing that. And I love the towards the end where you're saying, I'm hungry for the potato sausage dipped in spicy mustard, the brown mustard. It reminds me of when I was talking about how I want to eat chicken last week. So I thought that was funny. So yeah. I thought that was
Thank you
good.
So much.
Yeah, I thought it was
yeah, that, that's a fantastic thing to bring up, too, because that might have been the – You know, that might have been the most Wisconsin thing ever said, you know, and that's what I like about Pam. She likes the sausage with the hot mustard. No, Laurent, what did you think about this, right?
Well, I'm in the process of reading it for the second time. I was a little awestruck the first time. The beginning, for instance, this poem will suck. It will suck like an orgasmic lamprey. That is a hell of a line, Pam. Writhing, indeed. It left me chuckling. And then I had to think about it seriously. Life is a pile of razor blade manure stinking the place up. And honestly, you, I, and Jim Morrison, we all know some awkwardness isn't just a stage. It's a blessing. It's a curse. It's a way of life that sees you to the vomit of dreams. There's so much we can say in life. So much other people can say. Some of it's relevant, some of it not. That's why I really like the phrase, the vomit of dreams, because some of it is vomit, but some of it is not. It's precious. It needs to be given life. It needs to be released. But, you know, that doesn't always work because, you know, for every good poem a person might write, they might write five or ten that are not very good. And I'm kind of like that. I share my shit along with what's good without remorse. If you take me, you take my good, you take my bad. Some of it
Absolutely.
Is good, some of it is bad. But I've got to read this again, not just because of its length, but the sheer cleverness and ingenuity that I see in this poem. For instance, the insertion of songs that we all know at different points in the poem add so much to the right. Just it's a dynamic, living, breathing thing, this right, Pam. Love it.
Thank you very much.
Great comment, Laurent. And I'm glad that you pointed that out, the ingenuity of it, because Pam, you know, can write so well just, traditionally, or I don't know if there is a traditional poetry anymore, but Pam, you can write so well in certain ways, and then all of a sudden this one you got emojis and things like this. Like, this is a poem that a 20-year-old would relate to extremely well. You know what I mean? Like this, and this, you're so creative, and you continue to evolve yourself, but you evolve yourself in a way that is fantastic, because you're saying that this is gonna suck. But you're allowing yourself to suck. I mean, there's just nothing not to like about this, right? And like Laurent said, you got to read this a few times because there's just so much into it. Because when you insert songs, you start to think about the meaning of those different songs. And so it would take me a little while to even piece together what all of this fully meant, but I just, like I said, I'm just in love with the sheer creativity and the sheer honesty behind it, and I just thought that this was fantastic. So thank you, Pam.
Thank you very much.
And Faziana, this one, I know you're back, but that might be hard to just jump in to comment on that. It was a fantastic write by Pam. Did you get a chance to hear it, or you want to leave a written comment?
I didn't hear it, but I'm looking it over, and I love the way that she plays with the physical form of things, like the writhing and the avalanche. Just the way that their spacing is so cool, and like you said, incorporating the emojis, and you know, like Pam, you're so like youthful of spirit. Like you're just amazing. I think like you'll never go out of style forever. You're gonna adapt to things. It's so fun, and I wanna read it again, stopping and listening to the songs that you say, so I can get the full experience. I will leave a better comment written later on.
Yeah, Pam is the Cadillac of all poetry, isn't she? She's just always in style. Could be the 60s, or it could be the 50s, it could be now. Pam is the Cadillac of all poetry, so I think it's fantastic.
I'm sorry I missed it. My husband came home and he retrieved my phone from the depths. he was like, so I had an adventure.
Wow, he's such a good guy.
Well, it turned out that I had left it in a taxi and the taxi driver took it home. So.
Your phone.
The field on Google Maps was actually a trailer park, and he had an adventure meeting some people there and stuff, but it worked out well. where he found the taxi and he's like, I bet it's in there. And so he's peeking in the window, and the guy comes out, and he's like, what are you looking at my car for? And he's like, that's my wife's phone. But
perfect. Well, at least he found it. It looks like we got Naomi on.
Woohoo! Welcome. All right. Well, Dexter, why don't you start reading, and I'm going to get her into the studio.
All right, awesome. This is Assassination Note. This is a little bit of an older one. It goes like this. Ran out of sorries. You may have accepted additional, but you deserve better. How did things get so effed up? I never wanted anything more than I desired for shit to be different. Fate is a red-headed stepchild who brushes his candy corn teeth with an ugly stick. But there I am, there I go again. My politician-like reflexes when it comes to accepting fault. I caught myself sleeping behind my back, doing cocaine off the tits of my dignity. It was like a carp fishing with my good senses. Just to set the hook that I am hard-headed, whiskey dick sipping on the grail of never beens and never wills. I wish you could understand, but you're a better person than I am. How could you possibly relate to dog shit that you just stepped in? I cried fire until my face melted off, all before breakfast this morning, but it's neither here nor there. It's neither here nor here, because if it was there, it no longer matters. End poem.
Excellent read and write. Pam, would you like to start the comments?
Oh, absolutely. I remember this one. And it's one of those that's worth hearing again. I really like how you mentioned fate is a redheaded stepchild who brushes his candy corn teeth with an ugly stick. The whole idea that so often fate is just ugly and it awkward, and we don't really know what to expect of it. And my politician-like reflexes when it comes to accepting fault. Too often times we're too willing to play play the bad guy, whether it's the end of a relationship or the end of a friendship or something that we're any particular point where more than one person was guilty, and oftentimes we take the weight of the guilt on ourselves. I like that you mentioned carp fishing with my good senses, just to set the hook that I am a hard-headed whiskey dick sipping from the grill. Very Bukowski-type lines there that I really appreciate. But it's like Bukowski suddenly went to the Midwest and decided to go fishing on one of Minnesota's 10,000 lakes. So really just an excellent ride all the way through, Dexter, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
I think my favorite line is doing cocaine off the tits of my dignity. And the way that you say that, how could you possibly relate to the dog shit you just stepped in? I cried fire until my face melted off. Like, this is that perfect mix of, like, heartbreaking and funny. Like, you have, like, a deep, dark message, but you have these little moments of levity, like the candy corn teeth. That's just something that you're really good at, Dex, at finding that balance of it's serious, but it's just a little bit playful, which helps us handle the serious. I think you're really creative in that way.
Thank you,
Laurent, what did you think? You're welcome.
Well, this is a humorous piece that was deadly serious. I think that you said something more or less like that a moment ago. Self-assassination, what concept? You know, a warning to the person who chose you, a warning to your mate or your girlfriend or boyfriend, whoever. I wish you could understand, but you're a better person than I am. How could you possibly relate to the dog shit you just stepped in? It's such an oddly satisfying way of looking at yourself, because it acknowledges so much of what is in us that we may not like, but live with nonetheless. You know, it's all about self-realization. The phrasing in this, and I think you mentioned the doing cocaine off the tits of my dignity. And there are other lines in here that are equally interesting. Fate is a red-headed stepchild who brushes his candy corn teeth with an ugly stick. But there I go again, my politician-like reflexes. You know, we're always so ready to make neutral emotions, you know, to put a pleasant enough face on everything. But that's not really the truth, is it? No. So, self-assassination, I like it.
Thank you, Laurent.
Naomi, welcome to the show. What did you think of Dexter's
poem? Hello. Yeah, I love the raw grittiness all throughout it, and those lines that people already mentioned. I love the idea of sleeping behind one's bed. you know, just curled up there in the corner, sleeping not on the bed, you know, not in the comfort, but outside of the comfort, against the laying on the cold floor there, just out there in the, you know, in the vastness of being slaying out there and not being in the comfort of one's own self, just being, you know, like I said, on the floor and cold. And I love the grittiness and the rawness throughout this poem, and the humor too mixed with the darkness inside of it. And there's so many truths I think that people can relate to in different times of their life. So just an amazing, amazing write all throughout.
Thank you very much, Naomi.
And I think that's everyone commented now, because we lost Confess and Goodnight Confess. Thank you so much for calling in.
Awesome. And with that being said, I got Naomi's on the board. We got a crew to get this. So Naomi, whenever you are ready, why don't you give that a read for it?
Okay. I'll just get back to the board. I was still on your poem. Okay, so I kind of wrote to the quote, you know, the one about not caring if you suck or not, you know. But I took it like in a messy way, you know, not caring if you look messy or not, or, you know, if you looked how you looked. So this is while sucking an orange. What is your name? And what is your favorite color? What color was the sky on that third day I saw you when that duck quacked a little too loud and startled you while you were riding by the pond? The sky was the color of sticky peach halves and wet cotton candy, the bubble gum kind. And the rest faded to a blur due to the dark blueness in your eyes as you looked over and smiled at me. Oh, yes, I remember that sky of peach and me standing sucking on an orange, khaki-fingered, smelling of citrus, T-shirt front all stained, warm with dribbles of juice, and how I didn't care how messy I looked, 'cause that day I learned your name and your favorite color and the taste of you. And poem.
That is such a beautiful poem, Naomi. I love the whimsy of the sky was the color of sticky peach halves. Like, not just of peach, but of sticky peach halves. And that the cotton candy is wet. Just the way that you describe each bit is wonderful. I love the being startled because the duck quacked a little too loud, and I can just picture the person's face when that happens. You know, it was that startled. That's just perfect. The way that you describe everything is so vibrant. And yet, the thing that's the most touching is how appearances didn't matter because you made that connection. You learned the name and the favorite color and the taste, and you just had that magic. Absolutely beautiful.
Thank you, Sylviana.
You're welcome. Dex, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought that this was just a beautiful poem. You know, while sucking on an orange is just such a great title. That's something that I always struggle with is titling poetry. And Naomi, I think that you just nailed the title of this poem. The sky was the color of a sticky peach has a wet cotton candy and bubblegum kind. It rested, faded to the blue dew of the dark blueness in your eyes that looked over and smiled at me. It's just such a, almost like, you know, and this is a kind of a cliche thing to say, but it's such a painting, you know, this is almost just a classic landscape painting that just the colors and everything stand out at you so much. And it's just such a sensory right that I just really enjoyed this very much.
Thank you, Dex.
Pam, what did you think?
I have to agree with how Dexter called this a sensory right. It really is. I like that you bringing the taste, the touch, the color. But what's most important about this is that it's the kind of right that is felt by the heart. It's such a small moment, but such an important moment. When you first meet somebody that becomes an important part of your life, and those questions that you ask in order to really get to know each other, and the questions you ask in order to remember every detail of that day, like the color of the sky and the stickiness of the juice, So just absolutely a beautiful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
And Laurent, would you comment? And then when you're done commenting, you can start your poem.
All right. This is a clever poem, skillfully written, beautifully written, with imagery and a vision of someone that you obviously love. But instead of talking about that person at any length at all, you describe the circumstances all around the moment. I love those lines. On that third day I saw you and that duck quacked a little too loud and startled you while you were writing by the pond. Kind of, it's a great way of introducing the character and then moving directly to the sky, the color of sticky peach halves and wet cotton candy. You talk you title it while sucking on an orange and give us other things that complement the orange. Sticky peach halves, the wet cotton candy, the bubble gum kind, etc. And remembering the sky of peach and me standing sucking on an orange, it's just a great image. But what I liked the best was I don't care how messy I looked, because that day I learned your name, your favorite color, and the taste of you. This poem, at least to me, was an appreciation in pieces, fragments of the moments and colors so well displayed, a novel way of introducing us to your love. There is an enormous amount to appreciate in this poem. Great.
Thank you,
Laurent. Great. All right, so you want me to move into mine? I will. Yeah, I don't know what happened last night. I was awful tired and could not sleep at all. So, thank you for giving me the freedom to read this now. This is called Muted Thorns. Woman of Mystery. Excuse me. Give me one second here. I need my glasses. Eyes are tired, too. Muted Thorns. Woman of Mystery. Warden beyond any circumstance of feeble strength I can muster. You sparkle in my tombstone mind, a diamond cut in wild facets of truth, never lies. I sag against the weeping of stone walls, wet and rough with the matte brilliance of my despair. Words attempt a genuflection, the chill of your indifference suffuses my efforts, cloaked in bleak smoke signals. The blood of my tongue wags the dog, drowning in spite of itself, seeking only a modicum of comprehension. Let June beget January, a clash of storm fronts billowing higher than an Olympus of sleeping gods. Within the turmoil is resolution. Keen sight we find, a brigand bound by his own lashings to siren calls. A rose rises in the mists, muted thorns keeping time with my pulse, timpani of gentle punctures that will not heal. Westerly breezes blow, swiveling iron roosters, traveling a slow progression, crossing the Rubicon of goodbye. Stories squirm, ripped at by my pleasure at the real, subsuming falsehoods raised for protection, stony mind crumbling, eloquence of gods wrapped in wings of a swan, gliding on colored glass, gutted of deception. Silence sweeps in, dusty farewells, all hail the backbeat of its passing. Incantations of an eggshell memory surviving its cracking. End poem.
Wow. Sorry, I was speechless for a second, so delayed. Absolutely beautiful. I love the eloquent way in which you write. It's just, and I could listen to your voice forever. I really liked the line, "You sparkle in my tombstone mind." The idea of that diamond in the tombstone, bringing life in what feels lifeless sometimes. The end, incantations of an eggshell memory surviving its cracking. Oh, that is quite the ending. This is gorgeous, the whole thing.
Thank you, dear.
Pam, you're welcome. Pam, would you like to comment?
Oh, absolutely. Well, first of all, I have to say, I read this and left a comment on it earlier because I had seen it posted and thought it had already been read. So when I found out that I was going to get to hear it read in Lauren's wonderful baritone voice, I was really quite happy. So that was a nice surprise. This just has a powerful and heartfelt imagery. I like how you take us through the process of grief and on the fragile memories and that become such a part of us. And sometimes we want to cling on to them, and sometimes we just want to push them away. You sparkle in my tombstone mind, a diamond cut in wild facets of truth never lied. You know, too often times when we feel like our mind is a tombstone, we want that sparkle there, but we only wish that it wasn't just in our mind. I also like the title, Muted Thorns. I feel like it's that kind of idea of life having lost something of its edge. Eloquence of God's wrath and wings of a swan gliding on colored glass studded of deception. Really strong lines there, Lauren. Just like I said, powerful imagery and metaphors throughout, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
And Dexter, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, thank you for mentioning something too, LaRonda, and thank you for sticking up here, hanging out with us so late here. The Muted Thorns, I just thought was fantastic, you know, and when we think about these memories, you know, and sometimes when we think about memories, and it's to me, the what the Muted Thorns was is that we can have a vision so sharp in our mind, but we don't always remember what was said. Sometimes we just can remember how beautiful somebody was when we were 18, or how beautiful that somebody was in, at this moment. And you look back on it, and it just seems like a very accepting place that, you know, time has passed and time goes on. And that's the beauty of poetry. Gliding color gut decepts, silent sweeps of dusty farewells, all hail the backbeat of its passing. You know, the time has passed on, but some people in something, you know, you almost don't, you always don't remember what was said or what was done. Sometimes you just remember how the way people made you feel and the way, and an image of them. And so I thought that this captured that so well. So very well done.
Thank you, Dex.
And Naomi, what did you think?
Yes. Well, I agree with you, Efeziana. I could listen to Lara recite poetry like for ages and ages. yeah, he just has such a wonderful reading voice. I was drawn to the deep hurt inside of this poem, which is, you know, titled "The Muted Thorns," and the way that he's trying to fight against, you know, all this hurt and desperation. I also was drawn towards the stanza that Pam, that was the first stanza that stood out, the one that Pam recited there, "Eloquence of God's wrapped in wings of swan gliding on colored glass, gutted of deception." But I also like the one where you talk about Where is it? Come on. Oh, yeah. A rose rises in the mist. Muted thorns keeping time with my pulse. Tympani of gentle punctures that will not heal. The idea of the thorns, you know, the rose and the thorns digging in, with each pulse and not never healing. Wow, that's powerful right there. But I mean, all your wonderful metaphors throughout are just so brilliant, Miss Lorraine. Just such a deep, powerful poem, filled with emotion here. So bravo.
Et merci.
Bienvenue.
Very well done. Great comments, everyone. Thank you for hanging out with us, Laurent.
My pleasure.
Next one we have is an audio by, I think, Chynoski.
Ah, yes, Cal. Here we go.
Sight, punching, piercing ghostly voids, quietly lingers, watching shadows, leaving stains on frozen windows of disparity, suffocated through blankets of sleep, drifting away. Dark confessional pain, and how dare they talk of it, to ruin perfectly azure skies, moods flying loop-de-loop butterflies, as courage takes its back seat, swimming against waves. Look what we've become, turning backs on starving ghettos, pinning bright yellow stars on rags, happily waving to passengers stuffed on trains, somehow not noticing how your neighbors were dragged away. We watched how high borders are raised, splitting humanity, caging children as we walk in Sunday best, to find ourselves smitten excuses, becoming blessed, holy hypocrites. Looking evenly at extinction, our quiet suicide, unable to turn rocks of cozy shade, exposing strange worms beneath, revealing lives of discontented madmen, nursing scars, our camera. Worshipping divine omniscience with a lens, shooting precision at a certain height and angle, those pedestrians passing upon crowded digital highways. Terror of the rain, washing our obscene luxury castles from mud and arrogance, our body becoming a bruised city, the night turning to slow blood horizon, questioning itself, though the buildings burn. Worn hands touch truth as delicate fingers sway upon wandering laughter, twined with low murmurs of the maddening machine, stamping snow off our boots.
Cal, also known as Chynoski, is so intense sounding in his audios. Thank you for that. And so quickly speaking too. I feel like I'd be out of breath getting through that the way that you did. Wonderful audio. The speed actually really suited it. I find this to be an intense feeling this whole way through. I especially liked looking evenly at our extinction, our quiet suicide, unable to turn rocks of cozy shade. Oh, I'm so sorry I sneezed in the phone. Hopefully that wasn't deafening. Exposing strange worms beneath, revealing lives of discontented madmen, nursing scars. What an image. And there's something about, like, when you turn over a rock and there's those bugs underneath, and it's just like a revelation of a whole other world. So to use that as a metaphor, I think, is just brilliant. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, his readings are always really impressive, because you're right, there is an intensity to it, both in the imagery and metaphor, and the way he chooses to read it, as if he's taking one breath, deep breath, and lets it all out. I like how overall this gives me the thought of speaking on a society that destroys itself through its choices and its actions. There's a real raw, gritty, almost, it's the kind of poem that has a beautiful ugliness to it, because you can see the destruction. You can see how people are treating each other inhumanely within these lines, and yet they're so beautifully offered up. So just a great write all the way through and very well done.
Agreed. And Naomi, what did you think?
Oh, yeah, this is very, very powerful. Terror of the rain washing our obscene luxury castles from mud and arrogance, our body becoming a bruised city, wow. The night turning to slow blood, horizon questioning itself through the building's burn. He says it like all in that stanza there, you know, how we're just, you know, fighting and just crumbling there, you know, as a society. I think this is just well written from start to finish, just an amazing, amazing write here.
Well said. And Dex, will you finish off the comments?
Yeah, I thought that this, you know, might have had a lot to do with Minneapolis. Just watching shadows, you know. Cal loves to have kind of a little bit of a political message behind his rights, you know. And he writes from definitely from the perspective or from the angle of that of the people, you know, which is kind of anti-establishment. And it's from a place of pain, you know. And so the intensity of his write definitely fits well. It feels like it could be almost spoken by somebody in an alleyway somewhere. But I thought that this was a fantastic piece and a fantastic write, and thank you for submitting it, Cal.
And where would you like to go next, Dexter?
It looks like we have next a audio here by Martha Gettle.
Ah, yes, I do.
I Can Fail by Martha Gettle. I give myself permission to fail, it's true. I can fail at so many things I do. Success is not always expected of me. I give myself permission a failure to be. Each time I fail, I'm able to learn more. When I'm done, I know more than before. So yes, I can fail at anything, any day. And I will learn more along the way. So now I'm no longer afraid to try. If I fail, it won't darken my skies. Yes, I'll have a smile on my face if I try my best, but still don't win the race. Life should not be measured only by the best. Some of us can try so hard and still fail the test. Failure we can meet up with every day. So what if we learn from it along the way? So now I'm no longer afraid to try. If I fail, it won't darken my skies. Yes, I'll have a smile on my face if I try my best, but still don't win the race. As long as I did my best, I'll hold my head up high. There's no shame in failure if you really tried. And each time I fail, I know that it's true. I'll learn more the next time I try to see me through.
Thank you for the audio, Martha. She can always be counted on to give us an audio for our poems and songs that she writes. my favorite stanza from her was, "Life should not only be measured by the best. Some of us can try so hard and still fail the test. Failure we can meet up with every day. So what if we learn from it along the way?" And I think that's a great attitude to have. You know, even if we can't be the best of the best, it still matters that we're trying. It still matters that it has those other perspectives. And I think that as long as you're learning from your mistakes, then it's great. I mean, was it Einstein, I think, who said something to that effect of, like, every mistake that you make, I can't remember his quote, but he has some wonderful quote about making mistakes and how each one taught him something. So it's not really failures, it's learning what not to do. And I think Martha has a wonderful attitude in response to the prompt quote, which was, "I just give myself permission to suck. I find this hugely liberating." And I believe John Green said that in an interview when someone said, "How do you write so many books?" Because it seems like every year he has another book coming out, and he's just like, "I just give myself permission to suck." You know, he doesn't stress out about it being the perfect masterpiece. He just lets himself write, and not to say he doesn't put effort into it, because you can tell he does in his books. He does work hard, but he just lets himself do it and doesn't stew on it and stress out about it as much, or so he says. And I think that Martha captured his attitude there. And Naomi, what did you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, as long as I did my best, I'll hold my head up high. There's no shame in failure if you really tried. And it's so true, you know, you have to accept that. You have to accept, like, you know, I see my own kids as they were growing up, and I had, you know, my first child who was an overachiever, you know, she had, like, if she didn't have 100 on every exam that she did, you know, it was close. And then I had my second child, Kim, that, you know, oh my gracious, she had we have ADD in the family, you know, and most of my kids have it, now I have it. And, you know, just to keep her focused on her homework was, you know, hell, you know, pure hell. And if she got the passing mark, then that was great, you know, because she gave it her all. She learned to be to work on things, you know, as the first, my first daughter, she didn't even have to work, you know, she just came natural. But then my second daughter, well, she had to work really, really hard. So I think that's an important message that Martha has inside of this song, that, you know, as long as you try your best and you give your all to something, you know, there's no shame in, you know, getting the result that you get, but as long as you give your very best. So I think that was an important message inside of this song. It was a very beautiful song. Thank you, Martha.
And I think that was a great comment, and it shows that, you know, everyone has different strengths, and you're right, the trying is what matters. I know me and my brother had opposite things, where if I could do academics, no problem, and I could not do sports for the life of me, and he was the opposite. Everything physical came totally naturally to him, and, you know, he's dyslexic and had trouble with school. He was better at trying at school than I was better at trying at sports. So I think he wins overall. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, another wonderful song by Martha. I really like the overall message of how you never lose because you learn from your mistakes. So just a great write and very well done.
Back to you, Dex.
If I could get Pam to read Collapse.
Oh, absolutely. I'd be happy to. All right. This is Be True to Yourself by Colap, and it goes like this. We are born catapulted from our mother's womb, some faster than others. The rapidity of my birth was triggered by the fact that my mother had to go down 3 flights of stairs and hail a taxi by herself. By the time she was at the next to last step, she claimed she felt my head already warming out of her. The way one enters the world is probably a good indicator of the pace of one's life to lead, and the one's pace is probably influenced by one's predisposition and character. Nothing was ever fast enough for me. My oldest sister, the worm, the phlegmatic, passive-aggressive type, but the one who obeys blindly to our mother or on authority in general. We siblings, my older sister, my sister, and younger brother seemed to have been just dropped from some UFO vessel into the same family. Our last names are just about the only thing we have in common. The mother would make sure we get along, or else, if ever she heard or saw traces of our disputes, she'd belt all of us with equity, not even bothering to ask its causes who was at fault. Big Sis knew how to maneuver an autocrat, a dictator, our mother, which means keep your head to the grindstone and don't mouth off. Little Bro had no choice but to make himself real small because our queen bee had an allergy to boys. She already left one on purpose back in the old country, so this one's here to better keep to himself real discreet. But the middle child, the problem child, as Psych 101 book taught me, was myself. Don't question why. It's all related to genes and whatever liquid your mother was intravenously feeding you during those 9 months in gestation. I apparently moved like a neurotic snake and inside her stomach. So when I was on mother's good side for finding a summer job that brought in a lot of money and thus the lard, she was sweet to me and the reverse to my sister just because I earned more. Despite the special privileges awarded to me, this didn't stop me from defending my siblings when I observed the injustice done to them. I got the better portion of food and a favorable treatment, but this didn't stop me from pointing this unfairness to my mother and ended up getting a hiding in return for mouthing off against her. Time and time I would exhibit this behavior, not only at home but also at work, and got myself in serious trouble with my employers. This cost me a job once, but still, you can't chalk everything up to the stars. But I say you have to live with your true nature and suffer the consequences, or else life would be so complicated to act out a different character for different relations, keeping tabs of all the calculations. Since I don't have a good memory, I prefer being straightforward. At least you can filter out very quickly the ones you don't want near you and go your own way with the good and few. And poem.
Great read, Pam. An excellent write, Colap. I especially like that ending of preferring to be straightforward. I'm with you there, and I prefer to be around people who are. And I like that you can filter out quickly the ones you don't want near you, and also know who doesn't want to be around the real you. I remember, like, back when I was on dating websites a million years ago, I was, like, way too honest. My friends were like, no one's going to message you. And I'm like, yeah, that's good. That gets rid of the people who wouldn't like the real me anyway. And they're like, Oh, crap, we're out of time. So, Colap, I will write you a big, long comment later on. Thank you for that. Thank you to Pam and Naomi and Laurent and Confess for calling in. Thank you, Dexter, for being an awesome host. And stay tuned for more shows. Pam has one later on tonight. Tomorrow, after midnight, it's going to be part sinner, part saint, and I'm going to carry over rites from tonight that didn't make it on. Dexter, you want to finish this off?
Yeah, just thank you to Pam. Thank you for Confess. Thank you for Naomi. Thank you to LaRonde, everybody that called in, everybody that wrote. Stay tuned. I'll have another contest here posted. Pam, do you got anything to say about your show tonight?
Yeah, 30 minutes from now, join us for Break On Through, where we'll have poetry inspired by the artwork of Wassily Kandinsky.
All right, awesome. And thank you to Fill My Eyes for allowing us to do this. And stay tuned for Open Poetry tomorrow night before Faziana's show, Part Sinner, Part Saint, for Phil and Laurent for Open Poetry. Thank you to everybody here on Late Night Poets, everybody that was on the board. Like I said, stay tuned and continue, and hopefully we continue to hear from you guys. You guys all make this show possible, and you also make this show fantastic. So thank you very much, and have a good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.